And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. You can check out the podcast 24/7 by visiting the website nickcraig.com or searching for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. Well, we start off this morning with horrific breaking news out of Washington, D.C. This is the latest as we know right now. A large-scale search effort is underway after a mid-air collision between an American Airlines passenger jet, which was carrying 74 people, and a U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter with apparently three soldiers on board. This was near Reagan National Airport last night, just about 3 miles from the Capitol and White House. With the details that we're learning is that it was American Airlines Flight 5342, which is operated by PSA Airlines, which was traveling from Wichita, Kansas to Reagan National last night. For individuals that are familiar with flying out of the airport here in Wilmington, you've probably flown PSA Airlines before. It is a smaller regional carrier that American Airlines wholly owns and operates. And the horrific nature of this is pretty remarkable. Security camera footage shows the situation as it unfolded last night in Washington, D.C. You can see as this video loops through, you've got a plane in the bottom part of your screen, and then a fireball erupts as that plane apparently colliding with this Black Hawk helicopter. You can see it there on your screen. This happening around 9 o'clock last night. And unfortunately, this morning, there are many more questions than answers as to how something like this could happen with all of the advanced safety features that both the helicopter and the plane have aboard. Crash detection sensors. You've got flight controllers in the area that were talking to both the helicopter pilot and the pilot of the plane. The helicopter pilot seemingly acknowledging that they see the plane, then for just seconds later to have that crash taking place. Again, a horrific situation unfolding in our nation's capital last night. One thing that I can pass along to you this morning is there is a press conference that is set to begin around 7:30 this morning. We'll see if it actually starts on time or not. We'll take you to at least a little bit of that live this morning as we continue our coverage of, again, this horrific situation. This is the first time that there's been a crash of this nature in the United States in the better part of 16 years, with thousands of airplanes landing and taking off and operating day in and day out. Airline safety, at least in the United States, is very safe. However, accidents do occur, and that is exactly at least what happened last night. Now, the plane and the helicopter, both of them plummeting into the Potomac River. If you've ever flown into Reagan National before, you'll note that you are coming right over the water, and then the runway starts right where the land begins. Not too dissimilar from LaGuardia Airport up in New York City, where you're water and then immediately on land, as the video shows this happening with the plane just a couple of hundred feet, talking between 300 and 400 feet above ground level. That's how close it was. Final approach to the runway, runway 33, where it did have clearance to land. From the coverage that I've watched this morning and last night, everything indicates that in this situation, it is the airliner or the airplane that has the priority. It was cleared to land, and that the helicopter, this U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter, was the one that, at least appears from the footage, crashed directly into the side, for lack of a better term, T-boned this airplane about 400 feet above the ground. As it stands right now, fatalities have been confirmed. We don't know the exact number, but rescuers, maybe you saw this before you went to bed, there was reports that some individuals had been rescued, but the report from the from CNN this morning is that nobody has been rescued. There have been no survivors found in the river. It is freezing cold. It was just last week that the Potomac River had a layer, a sheet of ice over the top of it. It's been a little warmer this past week, so some of that ice has subsided, but 15, 20, 25 minutes in that water and hypothermia would set in. It has been a freezing cold in D.C. over the last couple of weeks. And again, more questions than answers this morning. We do have some details, including a statement from the White House, a statement from the president last night that reads as follows. Quote, I have been fully briefed on a terrible accident which took place at Reagan National Airport. May God bless their souls. Thank you for the incredible work being done by our first responders. I am monitoring the situation and will provide more details as they arise. And again, those more details is a kind of what we are waiting on this morning, as we're expecting an update live at 7:30. We'll take you to that. There was some audio that was released from air traffic control immediately after this happened. You can hear the air traffic controllers calling fire command when this situation took place. Take a listen.
Fire command. The accident happened in the river. Both the helicopter and the plane crashed in the river. East of the approach end of runway 33. It was probably out in the middle of the river. I just saw a fireball and then it was just gone. So I haven't seen anything since they hit the river, but it was a CRJ and a helicopter that hit, I would say maybe a half mile off the approach end of 33.
So about a half mile off of the approach, that half mile would put it square in the middle of the Potomac River. What we are learning is that there were 64 people on board the flight, the jet, the regional jet operated by PSA Airlines, which, as I mentioned, is a subsidiary of American Airlines. 60 passengers, four crew members, that would include two pilots and two cabin staff, flight attendants that were working that flight. The U.S. Army helicopter had three soldiers on board. There were reports last night that there were potentially high-ranking military officials aboard that helicopter. That was not the case. That did not happen. There were just three soldiers on board with that last night. Potentially some sort of training exercise that was taking place. Not exactly sure. Sean Duffy, who is the transportation secretary, has been on the job a day, literally one full day. And he, around 1:30 this morning, spoke to press inside of the Reagan National Airport, where I believe that same press conference is going to be happening, should start in about less than 25 minutes or so this morning. This is what Sean Duffy, the brand new transportation secretary, had to That's what Sean Duffy had to say, the brand new transportation secretary. He had this to say last night.
Extend our thoughts and prayers to those individuals who were impacted by the events tonight. Their families. We know this is a very difficult time for all of them. I want to join the mayor and everyone here to extend our thank you to the first responders who, again, in very difficult situations and environments, are out there searching and attempting a rescue. Tonight, I spoke with President Trump and his team in the Situation Room. I had a conversation with Secretary Pete Hegseth as well. And then with the Kansas delegation and the mayor others in leadership, as well as Governor Youngkin from Virginia and Governor Kelly from Kansas. From the Department of Transportation and FAA's perspective, we are going to offer full support to those on the ground, to the mayor, but also to the NTSB, who is going to be conducting the investigation in this matter. We are going to provide all the support that's necessary. Mayor.
So, obviously, a very tough situation for him just being confirmed by the United States Senate. Took his oath of office a day ago, only to have this tragedy unfold within, again, a day of him taking leadership in the new administration. Again, Sean Duffy is the U.S. United States Secretary of Transportation. Again, more questions than answers, as we know right now. That press conference is slated to begin in about 20 minutes. We will attempt to take you there live as it happens, as we expect to get some additional updates. A very tragic morning across the nation. And unfortunately, we're just kind of waiting for some more answers this morning as to how something like this could happen. It weather did not appear to be an issue. It was a clear night from all reports in Washington, D.C. No fog, no rain, no other sort of environmental hazards that, of course, still wouldn't excuse something like this, but could make something like this more probable. Clear conditions. And really, the question is, with the technology aboard both of these aircrafts, automatic crash detection, and just looking and seeing it, less at least from the helicopter standpoint, as they were flying down the Potomac River, how something like this could unfold. We'll await that press availability and some of those additional details coming up here in about 20 minutes this morning. If that starts on time, we will keep a close eye on that. Again, no survivors pulled from the Potomac as of right now. It's feared that almost that the entire flight, everybody on that flight, 60 passengers, 4 crew members, perished in that fiery collision in midair outside of Reagan International last night. We will keep an eye on it. I'll provide details as soon as we get them right here on the Nick Craig Show. Really tough way to go to bed last night, and some additional tough details this morning. We are going to turn our attention to what continues to be a tough situation in North Carolina. Hurricane Helene. The recovery efforts from Helene have been going on now for the better part of 6 months. And with the General Assembly being back in Raleigh yesterday, this was the first time that lawmakers have really had a chance to dig into a brand new group called Grow NC. It's the Governor's Recovery Office for Western North Carolina that was spun up by Josh Stein. Stein, of course, a Democrat taking over from Roy Cooper. There was an agency and a group in charge of hurricane relief and recovery before that, not for Western North Carolina, but for issues and situations that took place in the eastern half of the state. Has two different names: Rebuild NC and NCOR. Those terms are synonymous when we're talking about the recovery and relief efforts for storms like Hurricanes Matthew and Florence. If you've been in Wilmington since any time before 2018, you are very familiar with Hurricane Florence. And Matthew, of course, affected some of the eastern half of the state very severely with crazy amounts of rain and wind in that area. Grow NC, Rebuild NC, or excuse me, NCOR and Rebuild NC have had some major issues over the last couple of years. As of right now, they are running a $350+ million budget deficit, and there are still 1,400 families that are awaiting their homes to either be recovered or rebuilt. It has been a very, very slow process, and in the meantime, individuals have continued to struggle while this government agency, which has over 300 employees, I'll note, or at least did, has completely mismanaged their money, have completely mismanaged their resources, and it has caused a completely chaotic situation. So with that, Governor Josh Stein, to his credit, realized and was able to understand that NCOR, Rebuild NC, in its current form, is not capable of handling the recovery efforts in the western half of the state. Not to take away anything from Hurricanes Florence and Matthew. I, like many of you, was in Wilmington, stayed in Wilmington through Florence. It was a very nasty storm. So not to take anything away from those storms, those tragedies. But the compare and contrast of what we saw with Florence, what we saw with Matthew, in comparison to what Helene did, the devastation and destruction caused by Helene, is not even close in comparison. Not only do you have a major geographical difference between those two storms, most of eastern North Carolina, pretty flat, pretty low-lying, which of course causes some of those flooding issues that led to so much of the damage and destructions from Matthew and Florence, but it is a much easier environment to work in than it is in western North Carolina, where of course you're talking about the mountains of our state. And with that, there is no question about it for individuals that have followed this as closely as I have, and we, you know, we talked about this on the radio in the past. There's no question about it. NCOR, Rebuild NC, was not capable of dealing with Hurricane Helene relief and recovery. The agency has been an unmitigated disaster. There's just no other way to describe it. They were set up and tasked with one goal, get folks back in their homes from these natural disasters that affected our state 2016 and 2018. I think it is accurate and fair to say they failed in regards to that mission. They were incapable of dealing with that in a timely, in a sufficient manner. So Josh Stein, again, to his credit, recognized this and spawned up this new group, Grow NC. So yesterday, there was a House Select Committee on Helene Recovery that met to hear updates from the Grow NC leaders that include Matt Calabria, who is a former Wake County commissioner who was picked by Stein to lead those efforts. The committee itself is chaired by Representatives John Bell, who serves in Wayne County, eastern half of the state, and Representative Dudley Green from McDowell County, which, of course, is out west. And there's been some questions already, especially with some of the picks from Stein. Do these individuals have the kind of experience and information that is needed to conduct what is going to be a years-long recovery effort for the western half of our state? And there, at least in the meeting yesterday, this is some of the information that we did learn as that hearing took place. Some of the impacts from the storm. This is according to the governor's the Grow NC office. Helene's impacts are estimated to be somewhere in the ballpark of $59.6 billion. So you're talking about a $60 billion storm here across North Carolina. With that, $44.5 billion estimated as direct cost, another $9.5 billion in indirect costs, and then about $6 billion in strengthening and mitigation. And the stats of the storm are tragic. 105 people lost their lives. More than 74,000 homes were damaged. That's an estimate, but 74,000 homes. More than 5,000 miles of state-maintained roads were severely impacted. We saw the pictures of Interstate 40 and some other major interstates that fell off the mountainside in the western half of the state. And this is the real touchy one right here. More than 7,000 miles of private roads, bridges, and culverts are damaged. And that's an issue. Based on the name, private roads and bridges, these are not something that is under the state's responsibility. This is not something that the state has or plans on spending money on. And on top of all that, there's estimated to be 50 million cubic yards of debris. Those are the kind of impacts that we're talking about. Major, major stuff. We did get some information as to the structure of this group, what things look like. It's kind of interesting. It's an interesting flow chart. So, of course, you've got the governor, which established the agency in itself, Grow NC. And then inside of that, you've got the Grow NC, which is going to deliver on the recovery efforts, provide guidance and oversight to accelerate some of that recovery, and coordinate across state agencies. Now, one of the things that was pointed out during this hearing yesterday in Raleigh is that Grow NC is going to allow other state agencies, whether that be DOT or EPA or whatever state agency it might be, Grow NC is going to allow those groups to do their work. Some of the issues, that, at least from what I've gathered in following the saga in the eastern half of the state over the last couple of years, some of the issue has been the micromanagement inside of the previous agency, well, still exists, but the other agency, NCOR, is that they were micromanaging state agencies, and it really, really bogged down that process and caused things, which, of course, government already has an issue with operating in a fast and efficient manner. You add on top of that a state agency trying to micromanage other state agencies, and the situation goes from bad to worse. So I was encouraged to hear that from Stein's Grow NC group, and that those numbers, the kind of flow chart there makes some sense. Now, there were some questions asked in the General Assembly yesterday about, you know, how big is this agency going to be? Because like many individuals in Raleigh, I was just as shocked to learn that Encore had over 300 employees. And you might think, oh, well, 300 employees, that's probably a bunch of electricians and contractors and roofers and various trade individuals working on rebuilding and recovery. And if that was the case, it wouldn't be a shocking number. But that 300 employees did not consist of members of the trade. It did not consist of plumbers and electricians. Those were all third-party contractors. This state agency, spun up by Governor Roy Cooper, had ballooned into an unbelievably sized bureaucracy, with individuals at the highest levels making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. They spent $350 million over their budget and were not able to provide results to the people of North Carolina. And it's why when I talked on Monday, when we talked about Trump's visit to the state and some of his comments on FEMA and pushing this back to the state, and maybe cutting FEMA out of the loop and making it essentially just a clearinghouse for money from the federal government, I had some reservations with that. I had some severe concerns because our state has a bad, in this case, a very bad, an abysmally bad track record with dealing with disasters. And so I am looking for this new agency under Josh Stein, who, I will admit, is not my favorite politician. I did not vote for him in the governor's race in November of last year. But he needs to succeed with Grow NC. This is not a political partisan issue. You have tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people that were affected by this storm in the western half of the state. They need their state and local government to provide them with the relief not only that they want and need, but deserve. That's the whole issue with this. You pay into the federal system. I got an email this morning about some more tax documents ahead of April. You pay into the state. You pay into the feds. You not only need this kind of response when you've got a natural disaster like Helene, the deadliest and most costly natural disaster to ever affect North Carolina, but you deserve it because you didn't have a choice as to whether you paid in or didn't. So we got also some information on the funding side at the meeting yesterday. There is a gap between what was requested from the federal government and the estimated portion of federal funds. So the request, which took place in November of last year, was $25.7 billion. That was the request. That was the ask. And you can see it broken down into these different subcategories. Now, what was actually received was about $15.7 billion. So you're looking at a $10 billion deficit between what was requested and what is estimated to be received. Now, the Grow NC folks at the hearing yesterday, to their credit, answered questions for hours from lawmakers, did indicate that the money that they are expecting is very much fluid right now. There's a lot of questions about federal response. There's a lot of questions about federal monies going on right now. It's a very dynamic situation. So I would suspect this number is probably going to change, and it will change as the weeks and months go on. So that's kind of the discrepancy in terms of money that we're looking at within this agency, or within the state, I guess, requesting some of these funds. So with that, we also learned yesterday that there's going to be an additional committee hearing this morning. Let me just double check my time and make sure the calendar hasn't changed. It looks like it's still the case at 8:30 this morning. So coming up here in about an hour, if you're joining us live on our YouTube, Rumble, and X account, about an hour from now, there's going to be another Joint Legislative Commission hearing. Now, this committee is going to be hearing additional testimony from NCORE. I know there's a lot of acronyms and not a lot of names being thrown around. NCORE, just to state it again, NCORE is the group that was spawned under Roy Cooper to deal with relief from Matthew and Florence. That's the group that's way over budget, didn't do their job efficiently, and have a bunch of money. GrowNC is a new group that was spawned up under Governor Josh Stein that is going to handle relief in the western half of the state. So those are the two different groups that we're talking about. Now, the General Assembly has been very critical of NCOR Rebuild NC for quite some time because the numbers are just astonishing. There was a period of time back a couple of months ago where NCOR said, oh, we're $200 million over budget, only to have the next day them say, actually, that number was wrong. It's closer to $350 million. And I can only imagine what we're going to find out this morning in this committee hearing at 8:30. I can only imagine what we're going to find out. So that's taking place. I'll be recording that. We'll watch that, and I'll bring you any details as we get them. A good opportunity to tell you about my X account. I tweet out stuff throughout the day. You can follow me on X at Nicholas M. Craig. You can give me a follow over there if you are interested in keeping up with some state-breaking news throughout the day, x.com or at X at Nicholas M. Craig. I'll be watching this joint committee hearing as it takes place live, and we'll provide some of those details on social media, and then we'll have some of those details coming up for you tomorrow morning if they're relevant and if there's anything good that comes out of that. So again, just waiting this morning, there is a press conference that is slated to take place coming up here in just a couple of minutes as we look at this plane crash that took place overnight, a horrific situation in Washington, D.C. That is supposed to start at 7:30 this morning. And as of right now, there does appear to be a crowd of individuals that are getting prepared and getting ready for that, as we'll hear from the mayor and some other folks in D.C. It looks like they are inside of the Reagan Airport again this morning. Excuse me, to provide that update. So we'll cut into that as soon as that starts, keeping an eye on that out of the corner of my eye. So with all of that going on, of course, yesterday was a busy day in D.C. You had the first of two hearings for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He made his way in front of the Senate Finance Committee yesterday. You know, I plan on doing a deeper dive into that this morning. Obviously, the news last night has kind of changed some of my plans on this. But I'll say this. Robert F. Kennedy, will he be a good pick for Trump? Will he do a good job as the head of HHS? I think so. However, is he the perfect candidate for that job? The answer to that, I think, is no. He is not somebody that ideologically believes. He is not somebody that ideologically stands with Trump, with conservatives, with Republicans. That is nothing new. That is nothing shocking that you're hearing from me. Robert F. Kennedy is a lifelong Democrat. Now, that doesn't mean that he is just, you know, needs to be an outcast because he's a Democrat. That's not the point. But he's not somebody that ideologically believes with Trump. I mean, his stance on, for example, something like abortion has changed dramatically. And he was hammered on some of those issues, and rightfully so, because it is a major policy shift. It is a major change when you go from saying that you're completely pro-choice to then saying you're pro-life. It's a major difference. I thought, this is what I found frustrating about it. Democrats who had a great opportunity to hit him on like the issue of abortion and things of that nature that he has absolutely flip-flopped on over the last couple of years, they decided that they were going to spend all of their time talking about just nonsense. They're talking about some vaccine program somewhere in Africa, claiming that he killed 80 people because of a visit that he made after some trial took place and people died. I mean, the Democrats were just unhinged about RFK. They had a real opportunity to make a case in point as to why he shouldn't be that pick, which I'm not saying he shouldn't be, but they had a real opportunity to drill down into the issues. And of course, in typical Democrat fashion, they had to make it all about a bunch of superfluous issues that aren't relevant. So I thought that was rather interesting, and we're probably going to see something very similar today with Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard's hearing is scheduled to take place at 10 o'clock this morning. I guess I should check and see if that is still on with, of course, the chaos that we're talking about in D.C. this morning. But, it does appear that as of right now, she is set to have her hearing coming up at 10 o'clock this morning as the director of national intelligence. So I would expect that Democrats will probably pull some of the same stops that they did for RFK with Tulsi Gabbard. I wouldn't be surprised that they spend all of their time attacking her on issues like we saw from people like Hillary Clinton, who said that she was a, Russian asset? Even though she is a decorated veteran, was a former elected Democrat in Congress. There's one thing that the Democrats are consistent on. I'll give them credit for this. As soon as somebody starts veering away from the Democrat Party line, as soon as Democrats start breaking off from the party norms, they are outcasts. They are complete outcasts. Tulsi Gabbard, not very long ago, was an elected Democrat. And what I suspect you will see today, not that it's going to get a whole lot of coverage with the news out of our nation's capital, but she is going to be treated so poorly by Democrats in Congress. Not only was she a U.S. member of the House, she was the vice chair of the Democrat National Committee for 3 years. 2013 to 2016, under Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who you're, of course, familiar with. 3 years she served as the vice chair of the DNC. A little over a decade ago. So she goes from that to breaking off with the Democrat Party because they're insane, deciding that she's going to be a little bit more of a free thinker in regards to her policies, her politics. And the end result of that is her being pushed out completely. And it's going to be a bunch of personal attacks, a bunch of the same nonsense that you've seen against every other Trump appointee with Gabbard. Democrats, it is obvious to me, even watching the RFK hearing, again, who I'm not thrilled with, but even watching the RFK hearing, it was blatantly obvious that Democrats are completely out of touch with the American people. It looks like the mayor of D.C. is stepping up to the podium live now at Reagan Airport in D.C., covering this tragic plane crash that happened last night. Live coverage here on the Nick Craig Show.
Good morning. I'm Muriel Bowser. I'm the mayor of Washington, D.C. We are here at Reagan National Airport to provide an update on the tragic events of last night. I'm joined by U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, D.C. Fire and EMS Chief John Donnelly, American Airlines CEO Robert Eisen, the Washington Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority CEO Jack Carter, United States Senator Mark Warner, United States Senator Tim Kaine, U.S. Representative Don Beyer, as well as the Chief of the Metropolitan Police Department, Pamela Smith. And we are joined by first responders from across the Metropolitan Washington region. I speak for all of us when I say, and certainly all Washingtonians, how very sad we are for American Airlines, for the United States Department of Defense, and for all Americans for the loss of life that happened with the collision of these aircrafts. We know that includes families from across our region, as well as in Kansas and across the country. This morning, we all share in a profound sense of grief. I do want to thank the first responders who acted quickly last night, who ran towards danger, went into a very frigid river, and have worked throughout the night. Chief Donnelly, last night's briefing, that we have a strong mutual aid agreement in our region, and those teams have worked together throughout the night in really tough and heartbreaking conditions. And we should all thank them for their heroic efforts. So we'll have several updates today. I'm first going to turn to the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, and then you will hear directly from Chief John Donnelly with a situational update.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, Sean Duffy here, Secretary of Transportation. We wish we were gathering for different purposes today. I just want to let you know that the Department of Transportation, the FAA, along with the White House, President Trump, local, state, and federal partners, all working together on this incident in unison. I couldn't be prouder of this team that's been assembled, working tirelessly. Mayor, I want to thank you specifically for your work. A few details I'd like to give all of you, and some of you reported this, but last night, if you live in the D.C. area, you would know that this was a clear night last night. The helicopter was in a standard pattern. If you live in the D.C. area, you'll see helicopters up and down the river. This flight pattern is seen oftentimes when you live in D.C. This was a standard flight pattern last night as well. The American Airlines flight coming into land was in a standard flight pattern as it was coming into DCA. So this was not unusual with a military aircraft flying the river and aircraft landing at DCA. And again, if you live in the area, you'll see that frequently with those two aircraft working together. As you many of you have reported, we have located the two aircrafts. The fuselage of the American Airlines plane was inverted. It's been located in three different sections. It's in about waist deep water. So that recovery is going to go on today as that recovery takes place of the fuselage of the aircraft. NTSB is going to start to analyze that aircraft, partner with the FAA with all the information we have to get the best results possible for the American people. I would just say that safety is our expectation. Everyone who flies in American skies expects that we fly safely, that when you depart an airport, you get to your destination. That didn't happen last night. And I know that President Trump, his administration, the FAA, the DOT, we will not rest until we have answers for the families and for the flying public. You should be assured that when you fly, you're safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary. Thank you, Mayor. I'm joined today by with Fire Chief Bonnet from the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority. And I'm John Donnelly, Chief of the District of Columbia Fire and EMS Department. Last night at 8:48, the control tower sounded an alert, which alerts responders to respond to a report of an aircraft crash on or near the airport. That sets off an immediate response from the Airport Authority Fire Department, from the District of Columbia and Metropolitan Harbor Patrol fireboats and other fireboats on the river in order to support that type of operation. Very quickly, this call escalated. It became apparent, you know, the responders realized that they had a plane crash and immediately escalated to a response that ultimately included about 300 people last night. These responders found extremely frigid conditions. They found heavy wind, they found ice on the water, and they operated all night in those conditions. I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the agencies that responded in addition to DC Fire and EMS and Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority, Montgomery County Fire Department, the Prince George's County Fire Department, the Charles County Fire Department, the Baltimore County Police Department, the Anne Arundel County Fire Department, the Alexandria Fire Department, the Arlington County Fire Department, the Fairfax Fire Department, the Prince William Fire Department, the Baltimore City Police Department, the Maryland State Police, the Maryland Natural Resources Police, the Department of Defense, the Joint Base in Bowling Fire Department, and the staff there, the U.S. Army, the U.S. Coast Guard, the United States Park Police, the Metropolitan Police Department, the FBI, and the NTSB. Despite all those efforts, we are now at a point where we are switching from a rescue operation to a recovery operation. At this point, we don't believe there are any survivors from this accident. And we have recovered 27 people from the plane and one from the helicopter. The District Office of the Medical Examiner has lead on reuniting these bodies and these people with their loved ones, and we will continue to work to find all the bodies and collect them and reunite them with their loved ones. We should also acknowledge that the Virginia Medical Examiner and the Army Medical Examiner are involved in this operation and a very important part of getting the people identified. So.
Our hearts are certainly with all of the crew in American Airlines, and we'll hear from CEO Isom.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning. I'm Robert Isom, the CEO of American Airlines. I want to express my sincere condolences for the accident that happened at DCA last night. We're absolutely heartbroken for the family and loved ones of the passengers and crew members, and also for those that were on the military aircraft. Our focus right now is doing everything that we can to support all of those involved and also the PSA Airlines team. This is devastating. We are all hurting incredibly. We urge any family and friends looking for information about their loved ones to call our designated helpline, and that's at 1-800-679-8215. And here's what I can share at this early stage. American Eagle Flight 5342, operated by PSA Airlines, traveling from Wichita, Kansas to Reagan National Airport, was involved in an accident just before 9 p.m. local time on final approach into Reagan National. It collided with a military aircraft on an otherwise normal approach, and at this time we don't know why the military aircraft came into the path of the PSA aircraft. Flight 5342, a CRJ-700, was under the command of four crew members. It carried 60 passengers, as you know, for a total of 64 people on board. In addition to local resources already here in DC, American Airlines has activated our CARE team. And that's a group of specialists that are trained to support these types of responses. These team members are on site or arriving soon. And additionally, we have members of our GO team that are on ground here in DC, and they're being deployed with resources to do everything that we can to take care of the needs of the families and the loved ones of the passengers and crew members. And that is our sole focus. And we're so grateful for the first responders. They've been working through the night, courageous efforts. And we're actively working with local, state, and federal authorities on emergency response efforts and closely coordinating with PSA Airlines as they cooperate fully with the NTSB on the investigation. I know that there are many questions. At this early stage, I just won't be able to answer many, but we'll provide additional information as it comes. Thank you.
I want to introduce the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority CEO, Jack Potter. The authority manages Reagan Washington National and Dulles International.
Good morning and thank you, Mayor. First, let me begin by expressing our condolences for all the victims of this flight and for their families. There's a lot of grieving going on, and so we're very sympathetic to that. I want to echo what was said about the first responders. When there's a problem in this area, everybody drops everything and they rush to wherever the problem is. So I want to thank the chief, the entire team from Washington, D.C., but just as important, the list of folks that the chief described, the federal authorities have been here en masse, and so a lot of effort was brought to bear. Unfortunately, we weren't able to rescue anyone, but we are in the recovery mode right now. And I just want to, last night I expressed the fact that we hope to open at 11 o'clock today, and that is still the case. We're going to open the airport at 11 o'clock. And again, condolences to the families and thanks to the many, many who are still out there working very, very hard to complete this recovery. Thank you, Mayor.
I do want to acknowledge that the Virginia Transportation Secretary is here in addition to the Alexandria Mayor. And I will like to ask members of the Virginia congressional delegation to the podium next. U.S. Senator Mark Warner, followed by Tim Kaine and Representative Don Beyer.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to join with everyone else and express my condolences for the victims. For folks who don't live in the DMV, we are made up of a lot of jurisdictions. Reagan Airport's in Virginia. Across the river, we have Maryland, obviously the district, but as been indicated by the chief, when tragedy happens, all those distinctions between the various jurisdictions and our federal partners all disappear. And I want to again thank all the first responders. On a personal note, I'll just add that literally I now know I was coming back from the district from a dinner to my home in Old Town Alexandria. And while I did not see the collision, I wondered, I'd never seen this many red lights streaming towards the airport and across the river in Maryland about this time. My phone started blowing up and I realized that this accident had taken place. There'll be a time to figure out, I know NTSB will have a briefing later in the day, but to the victims, our condolences, to the first responders, our thanks.
sorrow, thanks, and questions. So, sorrow, as all have expressed, to the crew, to the passengers, to the soldiers, to their families, to their friends, to their loved ones, to people who are still trying to get information and unsure whether their loved ones have been lost. We offer our profound condolences to them and our sorrow for this tragedy. Thanks, I'll echo, Mayor, what you began with. When you see a challenge like this and you see people from so many different agencies, local, state, federal, with different uniforms, different badges, but working in such a coordinated way, even in the midst of a tragedy, it does give you a sense of appreciation and pride in people's willingness to come to the danger and work together. And I started to see that as a local official 30 years ago in Richmond and definitely have seen it here. And then finally, questions. There are going to be a lot of questions, obviously, a lot of questions. And that's what the NTSB's job is to be an independent investigator of incidents like this. And they are here. We were in dialogue with them earlier today. They've been here since they got the alert, and they will be doing the work and playing lead in answering the many questions that we have. And that's as it should be. It's not a time to speculate. It's a time to investigate and get answers to the questions we need, and I have confidence that will be done. Thank you.
Following up on the Senator, I think grief, thanks, and service. With millions and millions of Americans traveling every year, we are all grieving, knowing that it could have been our loved ones, it could have been us, and our hearts go out to all those who have lost folks. In a most partisan place, also, it's I'm really thankful that Democrats and Republicans, people from all over, have come together to try to make sure that the people are served. As a local representative, I want the families to know that our office is available to serve you in any way we possibly can through this time of grief and transition and loss. And then also just note that we're deeply grateful for the people who risked their lives last night on a moment's notice and spent the whole night on the river in the ice and the wind, serving us. And then finally, as Senator Kaine, Senator Warner noted, after the NTSB investigation, we've got to make sure that at the federal level and with the support of Virginia, Maryland, D.C., we're doing everything we can to make sure this does not happen.
So with that, it's been said already that the National Transportation Safety Board becomes the lead agency in the investigation. Our jurisdiction in D.C. where the crash occurred over the river concludes as we, in the leadership role of the Unified Command, as we shift to a recovery effort. We expect the National Transportation Safety Board to provide briefings to the press later in the day. So at this point, we can take a few questions. Yes?
Can you say without a shadow of a doubt that people are safe to fly?
What we can talk about today is what happened here with the collision of these vehicles. We said what we know, and that the National Transportation Safety Board continues to investigate. I don't know that any of us have been briefed on anything that would suggest any other aircraft are implicated. Yes?
You're still missing 30-plus people in the water. What are some of the challenges in recovering them right now?
Chief.
So the rescue operation or the recovery operation goes on. It's a lot of touch and feel in the different parts of the plane or in the helicopter, and the crash area is a little spread out, so we've got some work to do. And I think it's a pretty normal type of situation. I don't think it's extraordinary.
How spread out is this debris field?
So the wind started blowing last night, so we've had debris travel from the airport down as far as the Wilson Bridge.
Mile wise, how far is that?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
Less than a month.
This is a question for CEO Carter. You're going to open the airport at 11 o'clock this morning. How are you going to do that? And what impact is that going to have on operations, on passengers, on people's anxiety? How are we going to do this?
Well, we're going to open the airport at 11 o'clock. It's safe. We've worked with all the federal agencies, FAA, and you know, it's been determined that we can open that airport safely. The recovery effort that's on our property is on the waterfront. Our primary runway, 119, will be open. It's away from any activity. We're going to have a secure area around that. So all are comfortable that we can get back to operations. Now, each airline will announce or communicate to their passengers what their operations are going to be. Obviously, their networks were disrupted overnight, and so we might have a slow recovery, but the bottom line is we will begin to have aircraft moving in and out of this airport at 11 o'clock.
Okay, so 1, 2, 3.
Has the flight recorder been recovered, the black box at all?
I don't think we can say anything about what's in TSB's purview.
You mentioned the airport opens 3 hours from now. There's a lot of helicopter traffic from the military, U.S. Park Police, and all that. Will helicopters be flying right through here as well, beyond the recovery efforts?
I don't know the answer to that. Jack, do you have anything to add? We don't have anything to add about that. Yes?
This is for Secretary Duffy. Can you reassure Americans that the U.S. still has the safest airspace in the world?
So the question is, can I guarantee the American flying public that the United States has the most safe and secure airspace in the world? And the answer to that is absolutely, yes, we do. We have early indicators of what happened here. And I will tell you with complete confidence, we have the safest airspace in the world.
Okay, what's next?
When it comes to informing these families who've tragically lost their loved ones, what has that looked like so far? Have any of them been informed? The flight manifest, is there any details you can provide on that front?
Can you add anything?
All I can say is that we have published the 1-800 number. We have family assistance centers set up here in DCA. We do in Wichita as well. I'm not at liberty to give the number of families that have been that have used those services, but we are making that use. We have over 100 team members that are either here or on their way that are specially trained to work with family members, handle travel arrangements, hotel arrangements, incidentals, to make sure that we're taking care of people in any way that they can, as you know, as our teams are hurting and suffering, as our passengers and their families need assistance, we're doing everything we can. I don't have any other more information on that right now.
Mayor, next.
We're going to break out of this coverage this morning. You're listening and watching the Nick Craig Show streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X as we just got an update from officials in Washington, D.C. about this horrific and tragic situation unfolding at Reagan International last night. A plane operated by PSA Airlines, which is a subsidiary of American Airlines, was struck by a U.S. Army, Black Hawk helicopter just 400 feet above the ground as it was making its final approach to Reagan last night. The substantive information out of the press conference here this morning is the fact that in terms of recovery, 27 people have been recovered from the plane. There were 64 people total, 60 passengers, 4 crew members, 2 pilots, 2 flight attendants, 2 flight crews on that, and 1 person from the helicopter. So 28 people in total, 27 from the plane, 1 from the helicopter, and the unfortunate but expected news that this is no longer a search and rescue mission. This is unfortunately a recovery mission at this point. The temperatures are incredibly cold in the Potomac River. It's around freezing. There was ice on the river last week. And it was expected that if individuals were not pulled out of the wreckage within about 20 or 30 minutes, if they hadn't already dealt with severe injury or death from the crash itself, that the water was so cold that hypothermia would set in within 20 or 30 minutes. This happened at this point close to 11 hours ago. And they, unfortunately, the update is that there are no survivors expected. 27 rescued from the plane, 1 from the helicopter, and expecting a briefing a little bit later on today from the NTSB that will probably dive into more of the substantive issues regardless or in regards to how could something like this happen. These planes and helicopters have incredibly advanced technology on board that that can alert before a collision. It's called some sort of advanced collision detector that can project out the way in which the aircraft is flying and warn that, hey, you might be colliding with something, so much that the NTSB is going to go through. So that'll be happening later on today. I'll be watching that and bring you those updates coming up tomorrow morning. Kind of a chaotic show this morning. That's what it is. Breaking news. We cover it, bring you that. We're coverage that you're not necessarily hearing on other outlets or other programs. So good to be able to bring you that coverage this morning. A busy day expected today. Tulsi Gabbard makes her way in front of the Senate at 10 o'clock this morning. We have got the NTSB that's going to have a press briefing a little bit later on this afternoon. And we are also coming up here in 30 minutes. We are going to hear what is likely to be a fiery hearing in the North Carolina General Assembly as NCOR, the group that has botched hurricane relief and recovery efforts in the eastern half of the state, are expected to make their way in front of a joint legislative committee at 8:30 this morning. I'll be watching that as well, and we'll have all of those details coming up for you tomorrow morning. Don't forget, if you are interested in supporting the program and getting access to show notes and more, encourage you to check out our Patreon. We're doing our first ever Patreon hangout tonight at 7 p.m. You can sign up for that at patreon.com/Nick Craig. We'll chat with the Patreon folks tonight. And for everybody else, we are back tomorrow morning live at 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Have a great Thursday.